Well, today is March 6, 2017, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio here in Washington. Coming up, North Korea launching four more missiles. The president accusing the former president of wiretapping. U.S.-backed Iraqi forces have begun a new push toward Mosul city center.
Thousands of civilians have fled the areas ahead of the fighting. A new camp south of Mosul has quickly filled since it opened in late February.
Zlatica Hope will have a report coming up. And also ahead, trending online, President Trump signing an executive order today, and Facebook with some big-time changes. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, North Korea fired four more missiles into waters off Japan's northwest coast today, but early indications were that they were not intercontinental ballistic missiles. South Korea said they traveled about 1,000 kilometers and reached an altitude of 260 kilometers. Japan saying three of them reached its exclusive economic zone. Both Japan and South Korea condemning the latest launches, which are violations of past UN Security Council resolutions. The United States saying it is ready to use the full range of capabilities at its disposal against what a spokesman called this growing threat. The North had threatened to take strong retaliatory measures as the U.S. and South Korea conducted annual joint military exercises. And last month, Pyongyang test-fired a new type of missile and vowed to continue launching new strategic weapons. Korea analyst Sung Yoon Lee of Tufts University talking with Victor Beatty here at VOA. While the military drills might be one reason for these launches, they might also be a further challenge to the new administration of President Donald Trump.
By trying to paint it into a corner with another small escalation, get the Trump administration to sort of accept North Korea's de facto provocative ways, accept it as a de facto nuclear power, by escalating and then toning it down a bit and waiting to be compensated politically and economically. And this rather primitive strategy has done wonders for North Korea over the past 25 years. Second, South Korea is in political chaos. Remind the South Korean public that you elect a hardliner like President Park Geun-hye, who is impeached. You dare to confront us, and you have more to pay for it than we do. Perhaps another objective is to showcase North Korea's capabilities. I believe that North Korea's blatant murder in Malaysia at an international airport of the leader's half-brother. In some ways, it must have been a demonstration to the world of North Korea's advanced chemical weapons capabilities.
What kind of reaction do you expect from the international community on these latest launches?
Well, we only have the past precedents to go by. This is, I guess, in a conventional way of looking at international relations, not a major provocation. So, as North Korea has done it over the past 25 years, probably they will walk scot-free, walk away with, you know, with this another round of blatant violation of many UN Security Council resolutions.
And continuing the conversation, Victor Beatty was able to speak with the RAND Corporation's Bruce Bennett, who believes the North's real aim was directed at traditional ally and neighbor China, as was the apparent North Korean assassination of Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, in Malaysia last month.
You don't need a missile that can fly as long as these missiles flew to hit anywhere in South Korea. And North Korea has been very upset about the Chinese attitude on its coal import cutoff from North Korean coal. So, yeah, this was a launch that was intended to defy the United States and South Korea for doing the ongoing exercises, but it was also clearly pointed at China.
North Korea can't afford to alienate China, can it?
It went ahead and killed Kim Jong-nam, apparently. From everything that can be told, it was North Korea that was responsible. And China had been very clear to North Korea not to do that and that it was trying to protect him. So this is a case of multiple acts by North Korea of defiance. I think North Korea is taking a chance, but the real question will be how does China respond? Because if you want to deter a country like North Korea, you've got to prove to them that the cost of taking such actions is greater than the benefit. China usually doesn't do that.
Malaysia's prime minister said his government did not receive an apology from North Korean ambassador for questioning the credibility of the Malaysian investigation into the death of Kim Jong-nam. He was ordered to leave the country on Monday. Now, Sun Yun Lee said if Kuala Lumpur really wanted to strike back, it could have several diplomatic ties. And Bruce Bennett said the North Korean diplomat might not receive a warm welcome back in Pyongyang because he was unable to prevent an autopsy and gain control of the body. Authorities said Kim Jong-nam died from the effects of VX nerve gas. Two women, one Vietnamese and other Indonesian, so far have been charged with murder. Time now for our social media segment with the grand wizard of social media, Andrew Podjeski. And we got a couple of goodies online here today, right?
Indeed we do. It's, shortly before we went on air, President Trump signed a new immigration ban targeting six countries as opposed to the seven that were targeted in the previous ban that removes Iraq from that list of countries. And social media, within moments of this announcement of the signing, already the hashtag travel ban is trending and the phrase Muslim ban 2.0. As many people said about this travel ban, it was, they said, an attack on Muslims. It was Muslim-majority countries that were being targeted. So there's a lot of fierce debate on social media about this immigration ban, this executive order being signed. One thing that I thought was very interesting, President Trump did not sign this executive order in front of cameras. Now, for somebody who's usually wants to be out in front of cameras, this is kind of unusual. My thought is that they did not want to create a moment that could get shared across social media, kind of a flashpoint moment where he signs this executive order. Instead, what they did was they sent out Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and Secretary of Homeland Security John Kelly to discuss the ban, each of those three cabinet members talking about the merits of this executive order. But we're seeing already some back and forth criticism about the ban. Lawyers already gearing up to continue the fight. So it's going to be an interesting.
Yes, it will.
Going to be an interesting implementation.
Now, what's going on here with Facebook? There's a couple of changes coming around on there. We got about 30 seconds, I guess, but
yeah,
flashes through that.
So really quickly, two new changes to Facebook. One, they have a new way for you to tag disputed news. So we talked about fake news stories.
Yes.
People can now click and tag them as disputed news. Not clear exactly how that's going to work, but they have rolled out that feature. So you will be seeing that in the news feed if a story is deemed fake. And also, after years of people asking on Facebook, they're finally rolling out a dislike button.
Dislike.
You can like things, you can actually have reactions. They have love, haha, wow, all those different reactions. Now you can dislike things. They're rolling that out, and if enough people like the dislike button, it may be a permanent feature.
Interesting. We'll see how many. We only get likes here, don't we?
We only get likes and loves and all the good stuff.
That's
only.
Right. All right. Andrew Podjeski with all the good things online. Thanks a lot. You may follow him on Twitter at, Jay, Abby Lee, all these guys. I don't even know these addresses right now. What have we got? A. Paul at G. Abby Lee at Michael Lippin. And,
that's the whole team right there.
Everybody
here. I'm at APAL, at APAL, APAL.
At APAL.
At that's G. the whole Abby team. Lee. We've got everybody covered.
Excellent. Yeah, okay. Excellent. Thanks a lot, Andrew. Stick around. We got more coming your way. Among the top stories in the world, North Korea firing four ballistic missiles Monday with one landing in Japan's exclusive economic zone. Where's the evidence to back up President Trump's suggestion that the Obama administration wiretap Trump Tower phones before the election? Meantime, the FBI chief asking the Justice Department to dispute the wiretap accusations. And Syrian democratic forces are working to retake Raqqa from Islamic State militants. And the WHO says pollution killing more than 1 to 4 children every year. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
The folks at NASA's MAVEN program recently had to give their spacecraft a small, unscheduled course correction so that it wouldn't smash into Mars moon Phobos. The spacecraft that has been circling the red planet for a little over 2 years conducted a motor burn that gave it a slight bump, about 0.4 meter per second in speed. That minor maneuver, however, kept the spacecraft from smashing into the Martian moon only a week later. MAVEN instead will miss crossing into the path of Phobos by 2.5 minutes. NASA reports that this has been the only collision avoidance operation the spacecraft had to conduct since arriving at Mars in September of 2014. According to the space agency, MAVEN, short for Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, has been studying the red planet's upper atmosphere, ionosphere, and how they interact with both the sun and its solar wind. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. A U.S. official telling the Associated Press that the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, has asked the Justice Department to dispute allegations made on Twitter by President Trump that former President Barack Obama ordered the tapping of Mr. Trump's phones during the presidential election. The official is not authorized to talk about the situation and spoke to AP on condition of anonymity. Justice Department spokeswoman Sarah Flores has declined to comment on the matter, and the FBI spokesman also is not commenting. The New York Times reports that the FBI director, James Comey, has argued that the claim by Mr. Trump is false and has to be corrected. The Justice Department not issuing any statement in efforts to refute President Trump's assertion. Meantime, James Clapper, who was the director of national intelligence in the Obama administration, spoke on NBC's Meet the Press about Mr. Trump's allegations against President Obama.
I can't speak officially anymore, but I will say that for the part of the national security apparatus that I oversaw as DNI, there was no such wiretap activity mounted against the president-elect at the time, or as a candidate, or against his campaign.
For more on all of this and other developments involving the Trump administration, VOA's Jim Stevenson had a chance to speak with our Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman.
It was just a few days ago that Donald Trump arguably gave the best speech of his political career, and it could not have come at a better time. His address before a joint meeting of Congress, where he got to lay out his vision for the country. And for someone who has gotten a fair amount of bad press for things that he said in public, this speech was quite well received across a broad spectrum of journalistic outlets and from just general comments from the American people. And then he very promptly stepped on that message and any momentum he might have had. He came out with an early morning tweet storm, essentially accusing Barack Obama, his predecessor in the White House, of wiretapping his phones in Trump Tower in New York City during the campaign. And needless to say, that was a bombshell allegation.
These are very serious charges, by the way, which he followed up with Arnold Schwarzenegger's firing from Celebrity Apprentice. So one kind of wonders the confluence of events there. But anyway, the media has not been able to find any facts to substantiate this claim.
Well, that is true. And that is because, number one, Donald Trump and the White House have provided no evidence to back up this claim. But number two, if there were wiretaps, these are things that are authorized by a court. And in many cases, it is a secretive court. It is a court that meets in secret, that considers evidence in secret, and where either the FBI or members of the intelligence community can go to these secret courts and present evidence. Those proceedings are not for public consumption.
Right. So presumably because they're investigating a crime of some sort.
Right.
And so you can't publicize this.
Exactly. So in the absence of anyone speaking about it, the news media basically has nothing to go on except what it can see. There are essentially two possibilities. Number one is that Donald Trump made this claim without any basis in fact, and that it will be proved false at some point. Or number two, maybe there was some kind of surveillance of Donald Trump. And in a sense, Donald Trump has opened up a can of worms of speculation about himself that he cannot control by his very tweets. I mean, if in fact there was some kind of surveillance performed of him during the campaign, then that means that a court would have had to have concluded that there was evidence to warrant that activity. Wiretapping and invading someone's privacy is not something that's taken lightly. So the evidence that would have had to have been presented against Donald Trump or against his inner circle or against his team would have had to be fairly convincing.
And this isn't just a wiretap allegation against anyone. This is against his predecessor, a former U.S. president.
Right. What Donald Trump is alleging is that either the Obama White House went through the hoops of getting the authorization for the wiretap or simply circumvented the law and ordered it a la Richard Nixon on their own. And of course, if that happened, that would be the most egregious case of lawlessness that anyone can remember in recent memory coming out of the White House.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Michael, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Well, U.S.-backed Iraqi forces have begun a new push toward Mosul's city center in attempts to take positions still held by Islamic State militants. The offensive had been delayed in recent days by bad weather. Officials say several villages in West Mosul have been retaken in the latest fighting. Iraqi forces retook the eastern part of Mosul earlier this year after an offensive began on October 17th. The latest offensive has caused a new refugee crisis as civilians flee from the embattled areas. VOA's Latica Hoke has more.
Iraqi officials said Sunday the U.S.-backed forces have resumed the offensive toward Mosul's old city center, an area still held by Islamic State, on the western bank of the Tigris River.
We have won victories, and as you can see, these are Islamic State cars and bodies in the street. The enemy is collapsing.
However, Islamic State is making every effort to prevent the crushing of its remaining stronghold in Iraq.
The enemy tried to hinder the advance of our troops by planting bombs on streets, placing booby traps in houses, and by using rocket-propelled grenades and mortars. But we continue advancing.
Thousands of civilians have fled the areas ahead of the fighting. A new camp south of Mosul has quickly filled since it opened in late February.
3,000 tents are already occupied, and the Migration and Displacement Ministry has distributed blankets, mats, foodstuff, and hygiene items, and emergency relief baskets, in addition to free-of-charge gasoline and gas canisters. The ministry is doing its best to receive families.
But as the number of refugees grows, it is hard to satisfy everyone's needs.
Food rations are very small. There is no breakfast. It is very crowded, and bread is in short supply, and people fight to get a piece of bread, and there is no electricity and no water.
To add to the refugee crisis, International Red Cross officials said Sunday that some of the refugees had to be treated for symptoms linked to the use of chemical weapons, such as blisters, vomiting, and red eyes.
Since 1st of March, the hospital that our medical team and surgeons are currently working at received 15 people that showed that they had some sort of exposure to chemical agents. Between these 15, there was 5 children and 4 women.
The use of chemical weapons is a war crime. Islamic State has been accused of using them in Syria, but this is the first report of the use of chemical weapons in Iraq. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
And you can visit voanews.com for more on this story and others. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and like us on Facebook at VOA Now. I'm Philip Alexio, and you're listening to the International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Well, the world is in the midst of a mobile tech revolution that promises to change the way people live our lives, according to industry experts. Now, the latest innovations have been on show at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. Henry Ridgewell is following the story.
Mobile technology has changed our lives, but there's a lot more to come yet, say industry insiders at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. It's a showcase of the latest technology and a glimpse of what the future holds. Please move it. Meet Peebo, a mobile-connected robot designed to help families connect and express their emotions in the digital age. Or you could invest in a digital hang drum, a traditional instrument used in yoga, updated for the 21st century so it syncs with your smartphone. US giants AT&T and General Electric have come up with smart street lamps with cameras, sensors and microphones connected to 4G mobile networks. Over 3,000 are being installed in San Diego, California, and will be used for traffic analysis. But the makers have bigger ambitions, says AT&T product manager Trey Winter.
You're going to be able to detect smart parking solutions, gunshot detection inside of a city infrastructure, environmental features, detecting weather, smog, pollution, really bringing to life the intelligence inside of a city.
Much of the buzz at this year's show is around super-fast 5G networks with faster download speeds and almost zero delay. Roger Chen of CNET magazine explains.
So we're talking about real-time connection. The best example someone's given to me is a surgeon performing surgery in one country with robotic hands in another country.
Mobile technology is transforming economies in many African countries. There are smartphone apps for herding cattle in Kenya and for connecting dirty laundry to mobile washerwomen in Uganda. Eneza uses basic mobile technology to offer access to a huge range of education. 2 million students are signed up to its virtual classroom, and the better their grades, the more mobile airtime the parents receive. Stephen Haggard is the company's chairman.
They're able to access all the education they want for a subscription that's about 10 cents, 10 US cents per week. That covers the full curriculum and will get them from everything they need to do around age 8 through to finishing school. The reality in most of Africa is that mobile technology is actually the only way that you can reach huge numbers of people at low cost with any kind of content.
A recent report by consultants McKinsey predicted that by 2025, half of sub-Saharan Africa's billion-strong population will have internet access, over two-thirds via smartphones. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And you've been listening to International Edition. I'm Philip Alexiou in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump called on the Venezuelan government to release opposition leader and political prisoner Leopoldo López. In a February 15th tweet, President Trump said, "Venezuela should allow Leopoldo López, a political prisoner and husband of Lilian Tintori, out of prison immediately." Ms. Tintori thanked President Trump in a series of tweets for standing with the Venezuelan people and our aspirations to restore democracy to our country. López was sentenced in 2015 to nearly 14 years in prison on a series of specious charges, including arson, inciting damage to a building, instigation to commit crimes, and belonging to an organized crime group during anti-government protests in 2014. López has been a leader of the opposition to Venezuela's socialist government and founded the Popular Will Party. López's trial and sentence were condemned by the United States as well as the United Nations. The Venezuelan Supreme Court denied his appeals on February 16th. The Venezuelan government continues to arrest and imprison citizens from across Venezuelan society for their political beliefs. Currently, more than 100 such individuals are in prison. These include Leopoldo López, who completed his third year in prison February 18th, Caracas Mayor Antonio Ledezma, who completed his second year under house arrest February 19th, former Mayor Daniel Ceballos, and many other students, activists, journalists, and peaceful protesters. The United States condemns these arrests and other actions taken by the Venezuelan government to criminalize dissent and deny its citizens the benefits of democracy. Acting U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner said, "We call for the immediate release of all prisoners of conscience, respect for the rule of law, the freedom of the press, the separation of constitutional powers within the government, and the restoration of a democratic process that reflects the will of the Venezuelan people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.